You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.
The BP oil disaster in 2010 spewed almost 5 million barrels of oil into the Gulf of Mexico. The explosion that triggered the spill killed 11 workers and injured 16 others. Since then, many cleanup workers and locals have experienced serious illnesses. As for the wildlife, dead dolphins are common. Fish with huge lesions and three-eyed shrimp have been found, and some marine species have disappeared altogether. How much compensation should BP pay for the damage that it has done? Earlier this month, it was announced that a settlement had been proposed between BP and the plaintiffs. But Antonia Juhasz says that the legal process has just begun. Antonia Juhasz is the author of Black Tide, The Devastating Impact of the Gulf Oil Spill. She has been covering the spill trial for The Nation magazine. I spoke with Antonia earlier this week from her home in San Francisco. I began by asking her about the recent settlement proposal.
One of the things that happened was that BP really jumped the gun and announced well before the other parties were ready to do so that this settlement had been proposed. And BP did that because it wanted to appease its own investors. It also put a number on the settlement, $7.8 billion, which is just essentially a number that BP made up. It's its own projected estimate of what that settlement could cost it. But the truth is, the proposal doesn't actually have a cap. So that was BP announcing the proposed settlement when it wanted to, using a number that it wanted to use to make its investors happy. And it did, in fact, have that result. The reality is that this is just a idea that's on the table, and it is actually not a bad proposal. One of the reasons why it's not bad is that it doesn't, in fact, have a cap on how much money could go to these people. The other important piece is that this isn't a proposed settlement for everything. What's still on the table and what still could yet go to trial are all of the federal government charges against BP and all of the companies involved in this disaster, all of the state government charges, and that's, in fact, between the state and the federal governments where we find some of the biggest potential costs, which are, you know, finding out who's to blame and why they're to blame and what really happened, and then all of the economic damages from, you know, releasing 5 million barrels of oil to fouling wildlife and coastlines and the ocean and all of the costs associated there.
What about those federal government and state charges? What are they looking at there?
Well, so the first thing is that those charges are simply for the potential criminality of the actions of BP, Transocean, Halliburton, and other corporations that caused this disaster in the first place. The breaking of federal laws that allowed the disaster to take place, and as I said, potential criminal behavior on the part of individuals involved who made decisions. Then there are the various laws that the companies now need to be held liable for, which are things like under the Clean Water Act. They're charged per barrel of oil spilled and per ton of natural gas released into the water. Those fees alone should be well over $20 billion. Then they're charged for things like under the natural resources damage assessment, the companies have to restore all of the wildlife and all of the environmental areas that they harmed. So that's essentially, they have to pay a fine for every bird that died, every fish that died. They have to fix the ecosystems that they harmed, and they have to be charged fees for that. And then they have multiple laws, things like the Migratory Bird Species Act, the Endangered Species Act. You know, many of the species that were harmed in this disaster are things like endangered sea turtles and larger mammals, whales, sharks, many endangered species that fall under other protections, and they're going to have to pay for those fines. They also have to pay for the individuals who were harmed and the businesses that were harmed, the economic loss that they suffered. That this goes back to the individual suits that I mentioned in the beginning. and also for medical harms that people suffered as well. So when I tally it all together, I think that just BP alone, not to mention the other companies, should ultimately pay through this legal process about $60 billion with a B.
If there were a trial, what kind of information or what kind of things would come out?
We know that there are some 72 million pages of documents that have been unearthed in the deposition process and in the legal process leading up to this trial, which was supposed to start on February the 27th. All of the parties say that they're ready to go to trial. That's the federal government, the state governments, all of the different corporations say they're ready to go to trial. And we have hundreds of witnesses that are ready to be deposed. And what I think is going to come out at trial is even more damning evidence about the failures of the entire oil industry, because all of the companies were involved, whether it's Chevron, Exxon, Shell, BP, all of the companies were involved in response to the disaster, and none of them knew what to do. They all also use the same companies. So Transocean, obviously heavily involved in this disaster, is the largest operator of offshore rigs in the world. It works with all of the major oil companies. Halliburton, same thing. Cameron, same thing. So what could come out is very damning evidence for the failures of the entire industry to actually be able to do these operations and do them safely. Also, more evidence on BP and potentially criminal evidence against its employees, as well as Transocean or Halliburton's employees. Also very damning evidence about the Obama administration and its participation with BP in essentially, as I've documented well in my book Black Tide, lying to the public about the extent of the disaster, withholding information from the public, and its facilitation of the mistakes that led to the disaster. Because none of the parties I've named, the Obama administration, Big Oil, or any of the companies, want this information to come to light, there is a lot of pressure on settlement coming from many sides. That's problematic because I think it's very important for all this evidence to come to light. It's very important that we hear the testimony of the witnesses. It's very important that we get people who have never at this stage been forced to face a subpoena, because there's been lots of investigations, but none of them had subpoena power, to be forced to testify. And it's very critical that all of those faults be made known so that we can learn from them and make sure that this doesn't happen again.
So just to be clear, the United States government has a vested interest, or the Obama administration at any rate, has a vested interest in not seeing this case go to trial.
I certainly believe so, yes. I mean, in addition, the Obama administration doesn't want this trial hanging over them as they go into the election season, the presidential election season. And the Obama administration doesn't want to go head-to-head against Big Oil. If Big Oil and BP want a settlement, it means that not only does the Obama administration have to fight BP in court over this disaster, it also has to fight all of Big Oil in every other frontier, because it's having to essentially challenge Big Oil's interests by going to trial. So I think that there are multiple pressures that are pushing the administration towards settlement. The numbers that have been floated in the press thus far for the total settlement, which means that would include the individuals that have already been covered in this proposed piece of a larger settlement, is $20 to $25 billion. That's nothing. That's just what BP owes just for spilling the oil. Just if we adhered to U.S. law, if you spill 5 million barrels of oil, you are required to pay for it. And that is a minimum of $20 billion. And I think it's critical that we hold BP to the letter of the law. Otherwise, what's the point of having the laws? These numbers sound big, but this is the biggest unintentional oil spill in world history. It's going to have a big price tag. If it doesn't have a big price tag, there's nothing to stop it from happening again.
Now, if there were a settlement, would it include all the plaintiffs? I mean, there must be tens of thousands of people who have been whose lives have been changed, or whose property has been damaged, or who have lost jobs through this. Could a settlement possibly include all of them?
Well, the way that the settlement for individuals has been crafted thus far is that it's been turned into a sort of hybrid class action, which means that, as in any class action, you always have the opportunity to opt out. If you don't want to accept the settlement, you don't have to. No one's going to force you. And then you can continue your own pursuit against the company in court on your own. The reasons for having class actions is that it's hard for, you know, a small Vietnamese fisherman in Bayou La Batre, Alabama, to go head-to-head against the fourth largest corporation in the world. And so if you pool a bunch of people together, it gives you more power against the company. But people can certainly opt out. The other thing that's good about this proposal is that, as opposed to a standard class action, which is just one size fits all, everybody's treated the same. You all suffered from a drug, side effect. You all get paid X amount of money for doing that. The impacts of this disaster were so broad, from a wide variety of health impacts to a wide variety of economic impacts, that the good thing they're doing is proposing a series of classes to try and take account of the differences in people's impacts, and that's a good thing. The bad thing about a proposed settlement, with this piece as in any piece, is that records would be sealed. So because the settlement takes into account health impacts, which is fantastic, the negative side of that is that we wouldn't have access to learn about the health impacts of this disaster if the settlement requires a non-disclosure agreement by those that were impacted. And the history of oil spills is that this information isn't made public, and so we don't have good data on what it means to live next to a giant oil spill. The likely impacts are serious cancers, birth defects, ongoing pulmonary problems, neurological problems, dementia. We know there's all a whole host of very serious potential long-term impacts, but there's very little data because the records tend to be closed, and that would be a serious downside to a settlement on the health side here as well.
We don't hear so much about the oil washing up on the shores anymore. What's happening in the Gulf with all of that oil, and what's happening to the marine life?
There continue to be the most frequent harmed animals that people see are dolphins, that when they're going through their reproductive cycle. We've now been through two since the disaster. When they're going through that cycle, we see an abnormally high number of dead baby dolphins and dead fetuses and dead mother dolphins, females that were either supposed to give birth or did give birth, washing up on beaches in hugely disproportionate numbers, showing that the dolphins are suffering continued reproductive problems. Most marine species, however, die and then sink to the bottom of the ocean. And there's varying estimates on what the proportion is likely to be. Some say it's 1 to 1,000. For every one dead animal or mammal that you see on a beach, there's 100 on the bottom of the ocean. Some say it's much higher than that. What is most commonly assumed is that much of the wildlife that died is dead and buried at the bottom of the ocean. So that's what you see most often on the beach today, are these dolphins, which for some reason are actually washing ashore. Oil still washes ashore. We know that a good deal of the oil that was released remains on the bottom of the ocean, and it gets carried to shore, particularly with large storm systems like hurricanes. And in the last big storm system that came through in August, these huge log-sized tar logs came washing up on several beaches. And one person described them to me as it's as if there's these tumbleweeds on the bottom of the ocean of oil that are rolling along on the bottom, and then it just takes a big wave system to lift it up and deposit it on a beach. Also, smaller tar balls are now just a given where they hadn't been a given before on these beaches. You pretty much always see them somewhere. The impacts on the fisheries are very ongoing and very devastating. So there essentially has not been a good oyster harvest since the disaster happened. Shrimp harvests have been way, way down. Crab harvests way, way down. There are some marine species that seem to have just disappeared since the disaster. Some that are in much smaller numbers. Some fish that are being found with huge lesions, black blotches, purple blotches. This, you know, three-eyed shrimp, malformed species are also being found. So there's definitely, you know, serious ongoing impacts of the presence of the oil and the dispersant, both on disease in sea life and also just eliminating the ability of some sea life to reproduce or reproduce in normal or natural ways.
That was a conversation I had earlier this week with Antonia Juhasz. Antonia is reporting on the BP Gulf oil spill trial for The Nation magazine on a grant from the Nation Investigative Fund. She is also the author of Black Tide, The Devastating Impact of the Gulf Oil Spill.